Our next case this morning is number 07-1418, White against Girardot.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Carolyn Trier, and I'm the attorney for Mark Girardot in this matter. This court has jurisdiction over this case because a denial of qualified immunity defense is appealable when the appeal concerns whether the federal right allegedly infringed upon was clearly established. In this case, the case law relied upon by the district court in denying qualified immunity did not put Officer Girardot on notice that he was violating clearly established law on January 10, 2004. First, the district court relied on other district court decisions, and this court, as well as the Supreme Court, has consistently stated that district court decisions do not clearly establish law. Second, several of the cases relied upon by the district court do not predate January 10, 2004. This court recently ruled in Washington v. Harper that the Seventh Circuit can look beyond the factual account of the district court to all of the undisputed evidence in the case. And I'd like to briefly review the undisputed evidence in this case. Mark Girardot went to the VFW on January 10, 2004 because there was a possible fight that was going to take place. He pulled up his squad car. A fight did take place. He witnessed a man stand on the corner on the east side, or stand on the curb, I mean, and shoot a semi-automatic handgun down into a crowd. There was gunshots fired from the west side of the street, and then the shooter on the east side began shooting again down into a crowd of almost 100 people. Mark Girardot exited his squad car, pursued the shooter on foot. The shooter and another male subject ran up to the next to a Ford Taurus. The subject, who was not believed to be the shooter, immediately complied to Officer Girardot's police commands to show me your hands, police, show me your hands, police. Officer Girardot was pointing his handgun at both suspects, and particularly the shooter that he had just witnessed shoot into the crowd, show me your hands, and the suspect would not show his hands to Officer Girardot. Officer Girardot saw the suspect look over his left shoulder and look back. Officer Girardot believed that the suspect, who Officer Girardot believed had a gun, was checking his position. Officer Girardot was in fear of his life, and as the suspect began to turn towards Officer Girardot discharged his firearm.
Where do the allegations come from that he actually had his hands in the air?
There's one witness in this case, Dana Jones Sr., and he's on the other side of this Ford Taurus, allegedly getting into the car, and he states in his affidavit that Derek Ford, who is the deceased, put his hands in the air. He has a completely different vantage point than Officer Girardot.
Yeah, but see, now we're talking about questions of material fact, aren't we?
Well, I cited a case from the Fourth Circuit that was very similar to this case, Anderson versus Russell, and in that case, a suspect, well, he wasn't even a suspect at that time. He was at a mall, and the police received a call that he might have a gun, and they believed he had a gun in her sweater. The police officers in that case followed the suspect out into the parking lot. They ordered him to put his hands in the air. The suspect put his hands in the air. He then began to reach down and bring his hands down. The officers thought that he was reaching for a weapon, and they discharged their firearm. They shot the suspect three times. He was unarmed. He was actually reaching into his back pocket to turn his Walkman off. In that case, the Fourth Circuit held that the witness who stated that the suspect's hands were here when he was shot, head level, they said that witness, as in this case, had a completely different vantage point than the police officers, and that because there was an inconsistency, it wasn't enough to create a material issue of fact, because what a witness sees and what the police officer sees is never going to be exactly the same. And specifically, the court said, in a rapidly evolving scenario such as this one, a witness's account of the event will rarely, if ever, coincide perfectly with the officer's perception because the witness is typically viewing the event from a different angle than that of the officer. And that is relevant here because the one person who says Derek Ford's hands were in the air is on the other side of the Ford Taurus. Girardot is on the passenger side on the sidewalk at an angle. It's nighttime. They have a completely different view of what's going forth. So I don't believe it sets a material, or I don't believe it creates a material issue of fact.
Did they say they were facing the police officer with their hands up?
No.
He just said his hands were up.
Yes. And that's the other point is the witness, Derek Ford, was facing the witness. The Derek Ford had his back to Officer Gerardo. So they also have a different view of the deceased in this case. But based on the United States Supreme Court cases and the Seventh Circuit cases that had been decided prior to January 10th, 2004, it's our position that Mark Gerardo did not violate clearly established law. And there's one case I wanted to talk about was Ford versus Childers. And in that case, the police officer responded to a silent hold-up alarm at a bank. When Childers arrived at the scene, who's the police officer, he positioned himself next to a bank window. He saw the suspect in the bank. However, a pillar or wall partially obstructed the police officer's vision. He did not know if the suspect had a firearm or any type of weapon. When the suspect ran out of the bank, he was shot in the back. This court held in that case that the use of deadly force was objectively reasonable. And that's the case that was in effect on January 10th, 2004. And the plaintiff, or appellee in this case, has not cited any case that would have put Officer Gerardo on notice that he violated clearly established law. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And we'll hear now from Ms. Jefferson.
May it please the court, Heather Jefferson, on behalf of plaintiffs in this matter. We're looking at two main issues. Setting aside for a moment the plethora of discrepancies in the facts in between defendant's version of events that he provided in his formal statement to police, in his interview with Internal Affairs, in his affidavit that he attached to his motion for summary disposition, as well as his deposition testimony. If you set all that aside, the court only needed to look at one disputed fact, and that is whether Mr. Ford had his hands in the air at the time that he was shot by Officer Gerardeau. Indeed, the witness, Dana Jones, testified in his affidavit that Derek Ford had his right hand on the passenger side door handle of the green Taurus. It's paragraph number 9. As I stuck my keys in the car door, I heard freeze. I backed up toward the rear of the green Taurus, and then in paragraph number 12, the main point. Derek let go of the car door handle and turned around with his hands in the air. It's at that point that Mr. Jones testifies Officer Gerardeau started shooting. He states again in paragraph number 14, Derek Ford had his hands in the air. This court does not have jurisdiction over this matter unless the defendant accepts the facts as stated by the plaintiff. That is not the case here. Defendant instead has attempted to manufacture jurisdiction by claiming the facts are undisputed, that they're not material. Granted, there are numerous discrepancies in the facts that may not, the court may determine, be material, but it is extremely material whether or not Mr. Ford indeed presented an imminent threat of harm to Officer Gerardeau or to others at the scene at the time he was shot. Looking at that evidence, there is more that Officer Gerardeau's own testimony establishes that there was no imminent threat of harm. He said, first of all, he could not differentiate, as you heard counsel go through the entire scene of him chasing these gentlemen. This is a scene of approximately 100 or more individuals. There is testimony from several witnesses that there were numerous individuals at the scene wearing dark hooded coats. Officer Gerardeau has testified that the shooter he was chasing was wearing a dark hooded coat. Officer Gerardeau testified that he was only able to view a partial profile of this alleged shooter and that he only saw him from the shoulders up. Interestingly, he couldn't give any testimony regarding the characteristics of this shooter versus anyone else in the crowd. He couldn't say whether he was taller, whether he was shorter, whether he was of the same size. Also, as he gets out of his car and he starts to chase this alleged shooter, there's commotion to the west. This commotion is another shooting that's happening. He admits that at the time he starts chasing the first alleged shooter, his focus is on him, his attention is diverted to his west with this other shooting, Yet even though there's other shooting, and he's already admitted that he never saw anyone shot from this first shooter and that the first shooter's no longer pointing his weapon, no longer threatening anyone, he continues to chase this shooter, ignore what's happening on the, within the crowd to his west. And when he diverts his attention back, he had initially chased approximately a group of five individuals. He now sees two. And he sees these gentlemen approaching a green Taurus. He gave testimony initially that they had their that they were stopped with their backs to the Taurus when he first his attention was first drawn to these two individuals. Then later he says, well, they were running up to the Taurus and then reached the Taurus when I saw them. So there's a discrepancy there. But he admitted that he lost sight of the shooter, and he conceded that he was not even positive that the gentleman he saw reaching for the green Ford Taurus on the passenger front side of the car was indeed even the shooter that he was chasing. He admitted that there were at least three other individuals in the group of people he was chasing that continued to run past that green Taurus. He admitted that he never looked at Mr. Ford's hands. He admitted that Mr. Ford never pointed a gun at him. He admitted that he never saw Mr. Ford threaten anyone else in the crowd, make any verbal threats towards anyone, or make any physical motions towards anyone. He also, although testifies, and again, we maintain this is a discrepancy, whether his hands were at his midsection or in the air, but when he talks about his hands in his midsection, he admits in his deposition, I can't say where his hands were when I fired the first shot. There's a discrepancy as to whether he was squared off. First, he maintains in his statement to Internal Affairs, he turned facing me, squared off, then reached down. I thought he had a gun. We've presented forensic evidence that there's no way he was squared off with him based on the bullet trajectory, based on the angles of the wounds. It's at that point, following our response, that we take the defendant's deposition. He starts to change his story one more time. He also admitted in his deposition that Mr. Ford never charged him. And then the other discrepancy, he maintains, he said, show me your hands. The witnesses testify all they heard was freeze, and we've got the unrefuted at this point, other than defendant's own testimony, affidavit of Mr. Jones, which says that Derek Ford did indeed comply with the officer's commands. He turned around and was surrendering to the police with his arms in the air. As the district court properly concluded, if you take the facts in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, and I quote from the district court, assuming that Ford was surrendering with his unarmed hands in the air when Girardeau shot him, it's clear Ford did not pose a threat of serious harm to Girardeau or others, a conclusion which has been echoed by a multitude of courts. And when we look at the qualified immunity issue, what this court needs to look at are all the cases relied upon by the district court, as well as plaintiffs in their brief, all go back to Anderson, Garner, Hope. It's been established for decades that an officer does not have justification to use deadly force unless there is cause to believe that the suspect presents an imminent threat of harm to that officer or himself. It's clearly established. And taking that into consideration, the district court did not err in concluding that no reasonable officer would believe that it's lawful to shoot an unarmed suspect who's surrendering to police with his hands in the air, as such a suspect does not pose an imminent threat of safety to the officers and others. So in conclusion, we'd maintain that this court absolutely does not have jurisdiction over this interlocutory appeal in this matter because defendant has refused to accept the plaintiff's facts as true. This is not a point to determine credibility. This is not a point to take defendant's facts over plaintiff's. The facts must be viewed in the light most favorable to plaintiff. Plaintiff's facts must be accepted as true. If this court does choose to exercise jurisdiction, plaintiff maintains that there is clearly a question of fact here that must be submitted to the jury to sort out. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. How much time does counsel have left? Thank you.
Thank you. I would like to address some of the issues that she brought up. The record has been incorrectly stated. First of all, Girardeau believed it was the shooter when he pursued him because he saw him, not only just a partial view of him, but he saw the front of him, and he testified that to in his deposition. He pursued the shooter. He testified in his deposition. He looked away, looked back, because he heard gunshot coming from the west. That's the only time he took his eyes off the shooter. Drado testified in his deposition that he believed it was the shooter because the person had a dark hood and had the same appearance of the shooter. Drado testified that it appeared to be the same person based on his observation of the individual shooting into the crowd, based on his observation of the individual fleeing on foot, and based on his observation of the individual running up to the car. None of the affidavits submitted by the appellee state that Officer Dorado did not say, "Police and show me your hands." That is undisputed, that Officer Dorado repeatedly said to Derek Ford, "Police, show me your hands." The only thing the affiant state is that Dorado said, "Freeze." They never said he didn't say anything else. It is undisputed that Officer Dorado had given the suspect repeated commands to comply, and he continued to hold his hands in front of his body, causing Officer Dorado to be in fear of his life. The appellee brings up these issues that have nothing to do with this case, whether Officer Dorado said this or that. They have nothing to do with the circumstances immediately prior to him discharging his firearm, and that's what this court has to look at. What happened right before he fired his firearm? And in this case, what happened is Derek Ford would not show his hands. Officer Dorado believed he had just shot a semi-automatic handgun into a crowd two times. He would not comply. There was a man next to the suspect who complied immediately with Officer Dorado's police commands, and that is not in dispute at all in this case. The Seventh Circuit held in Sherrod v. Berry that the reception of information beyond what the officer reasonably believed at the time he discharged his firearm is improper, irrelevant, and prejudicial to the determination of whether the officer acted reasonably under the circumstances. And in this case, what the court has to look at is what Officer Dorado saw, not what David Jones saw on the other side of the car, but what Officer Dorado saw at the time he decided to employ deadly force. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.